Hello, and welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain and logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the program Mike Regan, who is co-founder and chief of relationship development at Transact Technologies. And today we're going to talk about the dangers of doing nothing in transportation management, or why you should focus on what you can control. So this is a timely topic because, 2025 is just around the corner. And many companies are in the process of developing their strategies and their budgets for the year ahead. So, are you going to be proactive in driving change and continuous improvement in your transportation operations in 2025? Or are you going to take a, well, let's see what happens, approach? Well, my guest today, who really doesn't need any introduction, has some great insights and advice on this topic. So, Mike Regan is a CSCMP Distinguished Service Award recipient, and he has a good pulse on the market and the industry and best practices, which he shares via his newsletter and 2-minute warning videos, which I hope many of you will subscribe to and take a look at because they're really short but also very impactful. So I certainly always enjoy receiving his newsletter and hearing what Mike has to say. So it's a pleasure to bring Mike back to the program. So Mike, welcome back.
Easy for you to say, Adrian.
Was a bit of a tongue twister there.
Well, I'm delighted to be here and looking forward to the discussion because there are a lot of things going on. So I appreciate the opportunity to get together with you anytime.
Yeah.
So.
So, the last time I was looking at this, the last time you were on Talking Logistics was almost exactly 2 years ago. It was actually October of 2024, which, the world of transportation might as well be a lifetime ago. So here we are heading into 2025. I mean, what's your take on the current state of the transportation market? I mean, what are you hearing from the clients that you work with? What's top of mind for them right now?
Adrian, I think for a lot of different reasons, one of the key things that's going on is how do we reduce variability, achieve a level of certainty that allows us to intelligently run our business? Because I think what the experiences of the last 4 years, and when we come into COVID, it basically showed how unprepared a lot of companies were when it came to having a supply chain that could be flexed, adaptable in response to changing market conditions. And then we had 2021, 22, where rates went through the roof, container rates were 25, 30,000. And all of a sudden, you saw some interesting surveys. You and I covered this in 2022 when we got together, that CEOs' supply chain issues ranked as one of the top three concerns for something like 64, 65% of the CEOs that got, were included in the survey. So the question basically we're at heading into 2025 is for a lot of companies, and this is just my personal observation, but I can back it up with more anecdotal stories than you have time. I mean, we could record for the next 2 months. But when it comes to supply chain issues, even today, a lot of companies are guessing at what's going on, what is going to happen in the future, and how we best address those changing market conditions. And that's why I think for 2025, Adrian, one of the things that we're really going to see an increased focus on is, how do we address the variability and what are we going to do about it? And just early this week, McKinsey came out with a great article about, how executives are running and managing their supply chains. So I think that's going to be a key theme for us heading forward.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think, I've had the opportunity to go to various conferences this year, and I'm hearing a lot of the same things from, from folks. And you're right. I mean, I think, the COVID pandemic certainly put supply chain logistics on the radar screen for many CEOs, those that, always view supply chain logistics as, especially logistics transportation management, as something that happens, magically and didn't really give much focus to it. And then they realized how important it was to business performance, to be able to execute effectively on the transportation and logistics side of things. And I think one of the things that we've been hearing a lot from executives, which they're trying to do, is move away from what you said, guessing or maybe managing their supply chain logistics via their gut feeling towards moving towards data-driven decision making. But not everyone's there yet. And I think they're trying to navigate that or understand that a little bit better. The other thing that I noticed is, we all know the saying that, insanity is, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting, different results. And I think the worst kind of insanity is doing nothing and expecting, different results. So, I mean, is this an issue with some companies when it comes to how they manage their transportation operations? I mean, and if so, I mean, what do you th why do you think this insanity continues to happen, still exists?
Wow, that's a loaded question, and it is a great question. And if I might take a step back and say, well, why am I in a position where I am guessing? And one of the things that we have challenged a lot of companies at is this question: is your supply chain built and based on facts or assumptions? We're doing it this way because our customer tells us we have to do it this way. We're doing it this way because our suppliers can or can't do this or that. And so we ask people, how do you know that? How do you know that? I've just, through my involvement in organizations such as Young President's Organization, I just got done running this wonderful five-part webcast series on negotiations with this renowned expert, Vicky Medbeck. And one of the things she brings out is asking that, not just how do you know that, but have you asked them? And so you basically, you ask, how do I put myself in a position where I, don't do anything? I don't know what to do differently. And if I don't know what to do differently, how can you expect me to change what has to be changed? And you and I have talked about this, and a lot of people think I'm making this up, but there is a thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect. And I think the Dunning-Kruger effect is something that is definitely in play in supply chains. And the Dunning-Kruger effect, you can all Google it and find out, is basically says a lot of people are unconsciously incompetent because they don't know what they don't know, but they want to believe they do know, so they say things that aren't true because they don't know any better. And so you basically are in a position, Adrian, and you do a lot of great work in the supply chain, areas with the Adelante and your groups and all, but it's easy to say, well, your best practices. Well, what are best practices, and how do best practices apply to the unique requirements that I have within my business? Then, because I don't know, I couple it with the fact that I have other priorities, and there's just a natural human law that you know in place. I'm going to gravitate to the things that I can do well. And so, if I can't do well in the supply chain area, I'll come up with all sorts of reasons to avoid having to take concrete steps. And one of my mentors early on is a legendary guy, Newton Graves with Yellow Freight. And I just talked to Newton about several months ago. He's 94 years old, still sharp as a tack. But one of the things he used to say to me, Mike, if you don't want to do it, any old excuse will do. But here's the challenge now. Here's the challenge. Can you afford to not do it going forward? And one of the things that I had the privilege of doing, for example, and he's a wonderful resource, Jeff Wilke. He used to be the number two person at Amazon behind Jeff Bezos. And he would have succeeded Jeff had he not retired 30 days before Jeff. So I talked to him for an hour, and he talked about how Amazon used their supply chain to beat the competition, because they created a series of capabilities that became standards for e-commerce companies, and these standards could not be done as cost effectively as Amazon could do them. So my question, if you want to sit back and do nothing for the CEOs and presidents and C-level executives, you better hope and pray that all of your competitors have that same attitude. Because if you have a competitor that what I call Amazon you, and create a series of compelling capabilities with their supply chain that you can't match, you're putting your business at risk. And that's why this, when you had this question, the insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different outcomes, that will never work. And so we get back to the original point, and I apologize for going lengthy on this one, but it is so important. And that is, let's build a fact-based supply chain where we understand what has to be done and what, can be, Peter Drucker, a mentor of mine, was very close with Peter Drucker. And he had the concept of called planned abandonment, if you're familiar with that. You know, what are the things that I have to give up or can give up that are basically not helping me in my business? And by giving that up, I now free up resources to address the critically important things that have to be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there in what you said. I mean, one of the first things you said, I think that struck me was, when we talk about, fact-driven decision making or fact-driven, actions, is and you said this, which I think is very important, is the step before that is asking the right questions. Are you even
Amen.
asking the right questions, right? So you have to, and I think that's where, part of the struggle is for a lot of companies, they don't know what questions to ask, or they're asking the wrong questions, right? So I think that's a key thing that I got out of what you just said there is make, asking the right questions. And then that will, from that is then when you look for the answers, not just depending on past on what you did in the past or your gut feeling, you've got the right questions. Now you got to find the ways to get the data to accurately answer those questions. And I think what you see today is, and it permeates through all of our society, particularly on social media, where anyone can say anything, and it could be taken as truth or accurate or right, right? And the same is true, in just business, right? I mean, you can go and make an assumption, and but if you don't have the data to back it up, if it's just a gut feeling, you might be heading in the in the wrong direction there. So I think that was a key thing that you talked about there. But you're right. I mean, I think the do nothing is really a recipe for failure, because we know that there are others in your industry that are not sitting still, that are really asking those right questions, getting that data, and really taking actions that I like what you said, that they are going to redefine the rules for success in the industry. But of course, they're going to redefine it in a way that they're going to be able to succeed in, and you may not. Because you're late to the game, you may not be able to adjust to those rules, and will be at a disadvantage perhaps for a long time, or perhaps you'll never catch up and be out of business. Now, the other aspect of this, which leads to my next question, and kind of I've alluded to it in the title, is knowing what you can control and what you can't control, right? So there are many things that companies can control in supply chain logistics, whether it's hurricane or labor strikes or things like that. But there are plenty of things that they can control, especially to manage their, transportation costs and their service levels more effectively. I mean, can you give some examples of what companies can control to improve their
Sure.
transportation management performance?
Yeah, and basically, Adrian, in response to that, one of the things we look at is there are internal factors and external factors. Some might say the internal, the external factors are what we call tactical-oriented items. Okay, I can't really control what carriers are going to charge me after I issue the RFP. They're going to make the decision ultimately on what their pricing looks like. Now, there are things that I can do that could potentially influence their pricing, but at the end of the day, they pull the trigger. They make the decision as to what the rules of the road, if you're going to work with them, look like. There are the internal factors then, or the strategic issues. Those are things that I can do differently that can have a tremendous impact on my cost, my efficiencies, my processes, et cetera. And one of the things that I, if nothing, if your audience gets nothing else from this interview other than this reality, it is that the carriers are basically using pricing to say, we're not going to basically allow your waste to ride free of charge. If you want to put these big boxes in small little things in here, you're going to pay for the air. And so you say the efficiencies. There are three things that we've said to people over and over and over to the till the cows come home. That with carriers in the LTL sector going to density-based pricing in 2025, many of your people in your audience may not completely understand it. It's the most significant change in the LTL sector in my lifetime in the industry, 40 years, okay? And if you're not paying attention to what UPS and FedEx are doing in terms of how they're addressing taking cost out of their system while increasing revenues, then you're going to get blindsided. And so, practical examples there. If you want to continue to give LTL carriers single pallet minimum charge shipments, that go out 3 to 4 times a week because the customer has to have that, you be expecting to pay for that. And so the issue we say, have you looked at how you're going to stratify your customer base? And I hear people say, when I stratify my customer, oh, Mike, we can't do that. Every customer is important. And I say, well, I want you to think about the airlines. You and I fly a lot. I've been a 1K flyer since the cows came home. I don't spend enough money for global services, but United Airlines treats me differently as a 1K flyer than somebody who is buying a ticket once or twice a year. Well, I ask the question, if you haven't stratified your customers and know what the A-level customers, you're going to do whatever they want whenever they want. B-level, you're going to do a lot of what they want, some of what they want. The C-level customers, you want them. But if, 80% of your customers are at the C-level producing 20% of the business, that's driving a cost factor into your organization in a waste factor. And when we have this discussion, one of the questions we often ask when people say, well, we can't change. One of the things we love to ask, Adrian, is would you like to know how much it's costing you to stay the same? Because when people view it, wow, in like, this is what it's costing, now we get religion. So, I don't know if that completely addresses it, but one of the things, how do I improve my transportation management performance? There's a whole host of things associated with the supplier management program. And here's the interesting thing, Adrian. This is what we're really challenging people because at Transact, we spend a lot of time on this, which helps differentiate us. Take a look at how your supply chain is impacting not just cost, but things like your balance sheet and income statement. We work with Fortune 100 companies down to small to mid-sized companies. And I will tell you today that the conversations, small to mid-sized companies, the 50 million to 500 million, the conversations they're having with their banks today is different than the conversations they were having 3 and 4 years ago when the banks were literally helicoptering money out of, throwing money out of helicopters. And so when I take a look at what's going on in the Red Sea, for example, when I take a look at ocean shipments and how that's affecting my cash conversion cycle, that's a balance sheet issue. When I take a look at digitizing my supply chain and how that impacts receivables, that's a balance sheet issue. And so one of the things we're working very hard to do, and look, you're way ahead of this, way ahead of this. You've been out front on this for a long, long, long time, which is why I have so much respect for you. But when I view this in the context of how's my balance or my supply chain affecting my balance sheet and my income statement, that's a completely different dialogue.
Yeah, no,
Does
I'm.
that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I remember years ago we did a survey with supply chain logistics executives, and one of the things that we asked them was, what new skills or capabilities would you like to learn, or you think it's going to be important for you to, move up the career path, or to help you get what you need to succeed in your role. And in more recent years, data analytics has kind of come up to the top. But historically, what was number one, and it's still high up there, is to be able to what I refer to as being able to speak the language of the CFO, which is exactly what you just said. They want to be able to, for them to say, hey, you know what, we want to invest in this process or new technology because we want to improve our on-time performance from, 89% to 96%. Well, that means nothing to the CFO. Right. I mean, that percentage change is, but if you're able to say, if we're able to impact, again, to your point, the P&L and the balance sheet in these ways, if you can tie what you're trying to accomplish to specific items in the P&L and balance sheet, well, now you're speaking the language that the CEO and CFO, can understand. And that's what I was hearing you saying there, right? And that changes the conversation completely. And when you're able to put a dollar figure on different things, whether it's waste or whether it's on opportunities, that's what's going to get the conversation started, and it's going to get the green light for many of the things that you want to do. But if you're strictly focusing and talking in supply chain or transportation metric terms, and there's no financial figure there, I think that's why sometimes you hit these bottlenecks. And the other thing you talked about is, I think a lot of the times, a lot of the focus is on cost reduction, but I think what really gets CEOs and CFOs excited is if you can tie it to growth. How are we going to be able to increase our top line, not just decrease the bottom line, but how can we increase the top line or increase our market share? And if you're able to draw a direct line between those two things, I think that gets to, you move away from let's see what happens to actually being proactive to driving some of these changes that we've talked about.
Can I give you a real practical example that every one of your supply chain, logistics, and transportation practitioners ought to be thinking about?
Sure.
Can I'm going to throw some questions out at you. And I started off as a CPA because my dad said I understand the language of business, which is accounting. And so, the definition of an auditor, someone that gets practical value out of this conversation, an auditor is someone who walks around and stabs the wounded after the war is over. But having said that, one of the questions that we want to ask you is, do you know what one day's cash is worth to your company? Do you know what one day's worth of inventory is worth to your company? Over the years, we've worked with Walmart, and one of my friends, you know him, Mark Holifield from Home Depot before he retired. I had Mark speak at a young president's organization meeting, and he threw out numbers he knew, but that's why his CEO said, when Mark walked in on the board, when he walked into his first day on the job, fix our supply chain. Because when I have a cash conversion cycle that goes from 53 days to 75 days because of delays in getting containers, what does that mean to the company? So when you go and talk to your CFO, you're not talking about something abstract. You're talking about a real issue that they're dealing with.
Right.
And now, and I can go on, but you know all this stuff. And I would just throw out one other thing here, too, because you alluded to this, and I want to mention something. Everyone gets spooked by black swan events. But if you have a resilient supply chain, your ability to recover from those black swan events can be a competitive advantage. And we have things that are on the horizon in the 25th. I do a lot of interviews with Mark Willis on Road Dog Trucking. I like to truck with the truckers, as I like to say. And one of the things we were talking about were people surprised by October 1st when the ILA went on, strike. And I said, if they were, they should have been fired. Because you had every indication going, the time to start worrying about the ILA was back in March and April. And we have something coming up on January 15th. If you're not at least considering what happens when there's no threat of a presidential election, there's, no reluctance to continue fighting automation, you're not doing your job. And I hate to be so strident on that, Adrian, but you keep coming, you've raised an interesting point. You doing nothing is not an option. Doing nothing, by the way, is in fact doing something. And that's moving backwards. And that's why it's so important. I apologize for these lengthy things, but I kind of get wrapped up on this. You can tell I'm kind of
Yeah,
engaged.
no, I mean, I love the passion and the again, I think that people have to get that receive that message because it is an important message. And then just tying it back to taking action, you raised best practices. Well, if you had a best practice back in 1980 is probably not a best practice today, right? And we all know that the transportation market is cyclical in nature, and we often comment on how it's becoming even more dynamic and unpredictable. So ultimately, and I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I mean, does this mean that companies need to continuously adjust their strategies and practices based on market conditions?
Absolutely. And let me just say, one of the things I have a profound amount of respect for you with the work that you do on the with JDRF and things like that. And one of the things that is that you are what you eat, right? And so, what I ate at 50 isn't what I could eat now today. Things change. We learn more. Our bodies change. Our bodies adapt. Your organization is changing whether you know it or not. The issue isn't if it's changing, it's how it's changing, and what are you doing to basically make sure that those changes are positive, that you're acting proactively, you're responding to market conditions instead of reacting to how market conditions are driving your business. And that's why at the end of the day, Adrian. And the value that we think we bring to the table is we're in the market every day and we're talking with lots and lots of shippers. And, I've been very involved with CSEMP, Knit League, TIA, and others. And we see things and we're talking to transportation executives. I serve on the board of a publicly traded transportation company. And, we interact with, all sorts of people. So when somebody like Rob Estes, who I've interviewed and over at transact.com, people can listen to him, or, other executives, Shelley Hunt or Shelley Simpson from Hunt or Derek Leathers from Werner, when you're hearing from the leaders, the Dave Yeagers at Hub, you have to listen because what they're telling you is what their companies are going to be looking like in the future and how they're going to be operating. And that has ramifications for what I need to do as a shipper if I want to have a partnership with that carrier. And not the kind of, we're going to be a shipper of choice type partnership, but really a partnership that's much more embedded, where I understand what you're trying to accomplish, you understand what I can and can't do. And then we can have a completely different conversation about how we effectively work together. So, for example, when you see the major the truckload carriers, for example, parked a lot of their rigs in 2023 because they weren't going to dedicate that equipment to the contract market because the rates were so absurdly low. When you see trucking today with a fully loaded cost of $275, it costs $230 to operate a truck. $275 is fully loaded because we have an 18% empty mile factor in there. And the rates in the spot market are trending at $2. You're dealing with a model that has to change because it's not sustainable. But if you're not having those conversations with people like you, if you're not part of, the phenomenal organization that you stood up in exchanging ideas, you're basically leaving yourself exposed. And perhaps the takeaway for me from loving to get together with you is, do you feel comfortable leaving your organization exposed and A, not knowing how exposed it is, the ramifications of it being exposed, or the steps that you have to do to minimize risk and, some risk mitigation strategies to protect your organization? Because if your strategy is based on the belief and hope that your competitors are going to be as bad as you, that's not a good strategy. I
Yeah.
don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yeah. No. I absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, and certainly this is part of the reason why we do these episodes and why we have the Indigo Research Community, because ultimately in this type of environment, there's nothing more powerful than peer-to-peer learning and networking, right? So really, all stakeholders in the industry really, obviously not sharing confidential information, but obviously sharing their insights and advice re with regards to their perspective of the market and the trends and how that's going to impact things moving forward. And I hadn't thought about this, but I think if I was a transportation manager or executive, I would, based on what you just said, because I hadn't thought about this before, I would probably sit in for the publicly traded ones. I would sit in on all of their earnings calls for the trucking companies to listen to their CEO and CFO talk about their business, their strategy, what actions they plan to take in the coming quarter or the coming year. And I think if you're a shipper and you're not doing that, you're again that's a blind spot there. That there is an opportunity for you to really gain some insights on how your carrier partners are, number one, doing, and number two, what actions they plan to take to fortify their business. And grow and so forth. So that could provide you with a lot of great insights. Now you talked about partnership, Mike. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and really focus on that relative to Transact. I mean, when it comes to working with partners like Transact, I mean, what's required for both parties, yourselves and your customers to maximize the value of that relationship? I guess to put it differently, I mean, what differentiates an ideal customer for you, right, versus one that you would choose, not to engage with?
Hopefully I've got a great answer for you because Lord knows we spend a lot of time. But since I brought the Lord into it, There is a story, Adrian. I put out my weekly word of encouragement. I was going to do it for 3 months, starting in 2020. Here we are coming up on over 4 years. And, I kind of like to say, I don't want to be ecumenical about this, but there's a great story in one of the Gospels where Jesus sees a person by the well. He was paralyzed, and he, if you got in the water, you could get cured, and the angel stirred it and this type of thing. And he'd been coming there year after year after year after year. And he started off with a very simple question. And I said, well, why would he ask questions? He knows the answers to all these things. But he asked a very important question is, do you want to walk? Do you want to get better? Do you want to get well? And when we, the ideal customer for us answers that question, yes, I want to get better. You know this, I've done in 2021, 22, I talked to over 3,000 C-level executives through some of the speaking engagements. And I had that supply chain spectrum. You say your supply chain's really important. You all stood up. Oh, yeah, it's very important. And then I say, well, if it's that important, let's rank it. One is you have a third world country. I've been all over all seven continents. I've seen, third world countries with better supply chain capability. Five is I'm world class. Five is I'm trending towards the Amazons of the world, the Walmarts of the world, the Home Depots of the world, and these companies, the Grangers of the world, the Abbotts, et cetera. But here's what's really important then. Rank your supply chain. 85% of the people that I surveyed said their supply chains were three or worse. So you say it's really important, but the reality of it is you're willing to live with something that's average or mediocre. So the ideal customer for us is saying, we're a two, we want to get to a three. We're a three, we want to get to a four. We were the largest privately held audit and payment company until 2000 when we sold a part of it to Schneider. We've worked with very large companies over the years, but when we got back in the business, there's five sections of Transact, our TMS, our audit and payment, our technology, our consulting, and our brokerage area. There's some wonderful tools there. But the problem there that you have, and Adrian, I'd love your input on it. People are so busy that they can't take time to get better. And that's why this for health is so important. The old saying is, if you don't have time to manage your health, when are you going to find time to recover from your illness?
No, that's a great point.
It is not static. It's trending up. Trending down. So if you're really serious about wanting to get better, we love working with you. And so we tell people if you're transactionally oriented, in the audit and payment space, Adrian, for example, we see freight audit and payment as an incredible asset. Some companies view it as an anchor. If you view it as an expense instead of an investment, and the data that the phenomenal data that comes out of that isn't useful to you, then go ahead and get, go to the Kmarts of the world and get, people that'll say great stuff. 85% of our customers come from the competition. There's a reason for that. As some of them have said, I knew it was too good to be true. There's a cost to doing business. There's a, if you're, you've got come from a great consulting background, et cetera, and so you need to decide if I'm serious, then I'm going to invest. I'm going to get the right people in my organization. I'm going to understand that, the return on investment is phenomenal, but I have to make a commitment. It has to be a priority, and people need to understand the vision, and the vision needs to be clearly conveyed, and that we're serious about it. Because a month in, 2 months, 3 months, people are going to know this is another BS transformation initiative. Okay? They're talking a great game, but they're not willing to put their money where their mouth is. I better shut up or I'm going to get in big trouble.
No, I think everything you brought up there, I think it ties it up nicely with everything we've talked about. I mean, it really begins with, being able to ask those right questions that we talked about earlier. And really, to even start asking those right questions, it's got to come from internally to say we need to get better, like recognizing that, hey, we're a two, we're a three, and we can't stay here at two and three if we're going to continue to succeed. Moving forward, we have to continuously, move up the maturity curve, if you will. And then, to your point, it's a question of putting the investment in, right? The investment in people, the investment in technology, the investment in relationship with the partners they work with. to make it happen. Because if it's just all words and no action behind it, like you said, people, the employee base, the company base, they'll just say, oh, this is, here we go again, right? We talk a lot about it, but we're not actually doing anything. And there's nothing that discourages, the workforce more than, hearing great things are gonna happen in the year ahead, let's say, and then no action, no investment, put behind those words.
Can I throw out one idea for you there that we've always talked about, and some competitors now have stolen it, but we've been talking about this for several years. Are you familiar with the concept called the iceberg of ignorance? It was created by a Japanese business consultant, and it's a great thing. And it basically posits that here's the iceberg, and below the water is where the bulk of the iceberg is. But CEOs and C-level executives are only aware of 4% of the problems that are affecting their organization. You move it down, and the middle managers are, aware of, I can't remember the number nine or, but the people on the line, they know what's going on. But what happens then is the people at the top think, oh, we think we know what's happening. They make decisions with really not understanding what's going on. The results aren't there. They say, we tried, we failed. It's the old joke about the guy who came out with some new dog food. Everything, was awful. The salesman couldn't sell it. The consultants couldn't put it. Everything was bad. And finally, he got some old guy walking in, and he said, "Have you ever thought about the fact that maybe the dogs just don't like your dog food?" Okay. And you have these change initiatives, and people come back then, and can see, are you serious about fixing this? And if you are, you can do some great things. And I hope they take advantage of some of the great resources you provide in terms of, like you said, networking, understanding how different organizations are working it. And then, if appropriate, bring in people, Transact and others that can help you say, here's where we're going, trending, start, stop, abandon, whatever. So hopefully that helps.
No, absolutely. Well, Mike, as a way to wrap up then, I mean, what is ultimately your call to action for transportation, executives for 2025? I mean, what should be number one on their to-do lists for the year ahead?
First of all, be very clear about what you want done. You mentioned revenue, top line revenue growth. Okay. It's so much sexier to say, if you walked into your C-level executive and said, I could increase your sales by 10%, they'd be like, how? Well, I'm going to give you $1 million in cost savings. And that $1 million at a 10% margin is equal to 10 million in revenues. That type of thing. So be very clear about what you want. The second thing is, be open about sharing what you want and the expectations that you want to see happen. What's going to happen in 2025 that's different from what happened in 2024? Third, what are the metrics that I'm going to use that will allow me to determine, are we actually doing what we're supposed to be doing? Is it achieving the results that we say we want? So clear on the vision, be able to communicate that down effectively, what has to happen, and then the metrics to measure it. And then, one final note there. I heard a great presentation, two presentations, over the years, and I had them on a webcast. Chris Kaplis gave a great presentation about he's at MIT, what I wish my CFO knew about sourcing. But there was another presentation from a gentleman at IBM a couple of years ago at CSCMP, and he brought up a very important point. I can basically work on three things. Three things. Everything else after that gets pushed off the thing. So the call to action for anyone listening to this, what are the three things that you want to see happen in 2025? And once I have that, then if you want to go deeper, say, what's it going to cost? Who do I need to have working on it? What support is it going to require from the organization? And if I had one other call to action, just revisiting, I know that's beyond three, but work on having a fact-based supply chain and stop guessing. Does that
Well,
help?
a lot of great advice there, Mike. And I think, I love the 3 points, because I think sometimes we tend to overcomplicate things by having a laundry list of things. And we all know that if you put together a list of 15 things, 20 things, Most of those things are just noise, or they're not
Yeah.
priorities. And then it just becomes very hard to focus, and then it becomes very difficult to know even where to begin. So really taking the time to come up to try to get it to just three, I think helps to focus the organization on those things that are truly important. And to your point, then, will help serve as a guiding light in terms of all the next steps that's required. Well, Mike, like as always, we could probably keep talking for another, 2 or 3 hours, but you delivered in terms of I knew you would provide some great insights and advice on this topic. So thank you for making the time to be with us today. Today is Friday, so I look forward to getting your words of encouragement email, which is a highlight of my day. And if those of you that are listening, if you're not subscribed to Mike's newsletter, please do. And not only will you get great insights on the transportation market throughout the week, but on Friday, you get a very great way to end the week with some inspirational words. And then finally, I'd be remiss if I didn't thank you and Transact for sponsoring our logistics leaders for T1D Cure cycling team for in support of Breakthrough T1D and helping to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. Today is November 1st, which is T1D Day. And obviously, November is Diabetes Awareness Month. So again, Mike, thank you and Transact for all you do in support of our team there as well.
Well, Adrian, listen, it's an honor. And today is also November 1st is All Saints Day. And it's not coincidental that TD1 and TD1 Day aligns with All Saints Day because the work you guys are doing and gals are doing on that is saintly. Okay. So don't be a sinner. Listen to Adrian and support TD1.
Well, thank you,
Okay.
Mike. I want to thank those of you that joined us. If you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Talking Logistics website or at the Transact website, and you've got a question or a comment for Mike, post it there, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.